Hello, you're listening to Spoiler.
Build.
Film.
Conversation.
Hooray!
Yes, so this week on the podcast, it's me, Richard Nicholas, hello. Abigail Bain.
Hiya.
Jamie Thomas.
Hello.
Anthony Evans.
Hello.
It's the full complement of the spoiler-filled crew.
Huzzah!
Yeah. And this week, the film we're talking about is Legend, starring Tom Hardy as both the Kree twins, isn't he, versus Hoyle?
Yeah. Oh,
what? So it's not Legend?
No.
What is it then?
It's Legend.
What? Yeah, so... Wait, you don't mean 1985's Legend, starring Tom Cruise?
Oh, starring a 10-year-old Tom Cruise and Tim Curry... in a rare appearance without makeup. Yeah, Legend 1985, directed by Ridley Scott, written by William Schwartzberg, starring Tom Cruise, Mia Sara, Tim Curry, a bunch of midgets.
<That's> Well, they don't deserve names. Maybe they're dwarfs, Jamie, as well. You probably...
What?
I haven't considered... maybe they're dwarfs. How do you know?
What's the difference?
Anyway.
I never remember. Like, there's... I know there's, like...
They're just people, Jimmy. You can give them names.
I know. I just... I don't know...
Yeah, it's a grey area. I was going to say it's a small problem, but...
actually... Sorry, I didn't realise this, but one of the... few characters that I enjoyed in this film. The hag in the swamp, Meg Mucklebones. I don't know if anyone remembers the giant gross witch monster thing.
Yes.
Was actually played by Robert Picardo, yeah. I didn't actually realise that my favourite character that wasn't Tim Curry's Lord of Darkness was played by Robert Picardo. Meg Mucklebones, the old hag in the swamp.
Hmm. There's a lot of old hags, in fairness.
Yeah. Well,
technical cross-dressing.
Yeah.
The big green lanky thing from the water.
When she or it appeared, I thought, wow, that's a pretty cool. I don't know what it wasn't really an animatronic like creature effect, and then Tom Cruise immediately killed her.
And in a really shit way.
Moved on. Yeah. But,
that's the whole thing about this movie, though, is that it just looks so good all the way through.
Well,
like, you can't really fault any of, like, the technical things about it.
No, I was just going to give the plot summary, which there isn't much of one, because there isn't much of one. A young man must stop the Lord of Darkness from both destroying daylight and marrying the woman he loves, which is pretty much it.
And killing some unicorns.
Yeah.
It ties in a little bit. We did a review for The Last Unicorn. And this is very much in the same vein of crappy fantasy about tracking some unicorns
80s,
down.
80s yeah. as fuck fantasy films.
Well, yeah.
I was trying to figure it out, and is this based on a book? Or is this an original...
It's based on random selections of words from the dictionary. That's what's based on.
It's very simple. Like you said, the story is very simple.
I genuinely can't describe the story because it's so like arbitrary what happens.
No, but like Jimmy put it, it is the basic kind of hero must go on mission to defeat bad guy and save his girlfriend. If it is based on anything. I don't know. It's so basic. Like, I think like it's probably an original story.
I can tell you. I can read a bit of the trivia for IMDb, which will cover this.
Is it based on a decorative plate? Just as a girl and a boy, and they went, "That's a good idea for a story."
Ridley Scott wanted the film to have an original screenplay because he felt that it would be far easier to design a story to fit the medium of cinema than bend the medium for an established story. By chance, he discovered several books written by William Schwartzberg. And found that the writer had already written several scripts for some unmade, lower-budgeted films. Scott asked him if he was interested in writing a fairy tale. Fortunately, he was already writing some and agreed.
And, yeah, okay, so this is... like I thought, there's something about this film reminds me of Prometheus in that it's a really, really pretty film, but it's also fucking mad and borderline nonsensical. Like, just what is happening? I'm enjoying looking at it, but I don't know what the fuck's going on, and I don't really care. Like,
well, why did you bring it up to us then? If because it's you wanted to prove Ridley Scott was insane, like what?
No, I'd never seen it properly. But a couple of my favourite films are by Ridley Scott. Like, the director's cut of Blade Runner, Alien. I still really like Gladiator, even though
Gladiator.
To be honest, I would say Gladiator's a little bit more of the same, because it's kind of stupid plot-wise.
What made Maximus Meridius...
Maximus Meridius.
Whatever his name is. Maximus Decimus Meridius. Father of a murdered son. Father of lots of murdered people. Pissed off.
Like Legend, it's a really basic story.
Yeah, but it has, like, coherent plot and understandable concept, and fun moments and drama. I want to go watch Gladiator.
But I think Ridley Scott is really... I like him as a director, because he just... For his entire career, he's just done whatever he wants. Like, someone's gone, here, make a film out of this. And he's gone, okay, and just vanish. It's as if he vanishes for months. And then he comes back with this... thing and presents it to the movie studio, and they just kind of look at it and go, okay, well, this is kind of what we asked for. he's entirely his own, and he's one of those like old school British directors who still calls people darling and smokes a massive fat cigar. So I think, even though I don't like all of his films, the ones I do like, I like a lot, and I admire him a lot as like a creative force. And I just wanted to see it because I remember bits and pieces of it from childhood, and I remember Tim Curry's character freaking me out.
Well, yeah. It's like it's like someone's mutilated a wax candle into looking like a kind of vagina devil.
and also, you know, from all the news recently about how sick Tim Curry has been.
Oh.
He's had a massive stroke, and it's made me kind of look back on... Because Tim Curry's one of those workman actors who's in everything. And it's interesting to see him in Legend, because it's perfect for him, but it's also probably the biggest part he's had in terms of screen presence, like that, like where he's been made up and he is the center of attention as a villain. I can't think of any other films where he's almost the entire focal point of the film.
Don't get bigger than Satan.
Well, I don't know. But Rocky, there's an argument to be made for the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, yes, but that was before this, and that was his first film. But other than those two, he's always like kind of a bit part actor.
But he steals the show in his bit parts usually.
Oh yeah, no, he totally does. He's just amazing to watch.
Well, he plays It, and he's quite a striking villain in that as well.
Yeah. I would say, actually, It, Legend, and Rocky Horror are probably the three major roles that kind of define his career.
What about Home Alone 2? He's great at that.
I was also going to say The Wild Thornberrys as well. But,
Clue and...
Loaded Weapon.
He's in Hunt for Red October as a really forgettable character. Yeah, well, if you want to look up, you could look up Tim Curry films.
He is the returning voice of the antagonist King Chicken in the 90s animated show Duckman.
Nice. He's the voice of pollution in Ferngully. Yes. He gets a boat. That's the point.
But this is, I think, it's this and Rocky Horror and It are the only films that really celebrate the fact that they have Tim Curry in them. And they go, oh, look at him, he's brilliant.
Sure.
And I just wanted to watch it, finally. I wanted to see what the rest of the film was like.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot.
The end.
Well, anyway, let's ask someone else what they're expecting. Anthony, what were you expecting when this came up?
Oh, sorry.
What?
I just found out that Tim Curry was Tim Burton's second choice to be the Joker in Batman.
Oh, wow. That would have been good. Jack Nicholson was good, but, you know.
I need to take that in for a moment.
Yes!
Right? You're my number one.
Oh, that's nice. I suppose, with me, the reputation of this film kind of precedes it. Because I've always kind of known about it as being a kind of bad film from the 80s. But also knowing that it has Tim Curry playing, like, the devil. So I've always wanted to kind of have an excuse to watch it. But know that any kind of fantasy films didn't really take off properly until, like, Lord of the Rings happened.
Yeah.
You got stuff like Princess Bride or something, which is kind of good.
Yeah, but the only kind of movies that that worked, any kind of fantasy movies, were animation. Like, usually they were Disney, and then it was kind of only vaguely fantasy.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I was expecting. I think I was kind of expecting to like it, because this is just my kind of film, kind of schlocky 80s fantasy weirdness.
It could have worked.
That's totally up my street. Maybe it's just people didn't get it at the time, or couldn't handle it or something. But I didn't really know what to expect. But, like, I knew Tim Curry was in it, and that was kind of, like, my beacon of hope. That I was holding on to. And to be fair, he is the brightest shining star there.
Well, he's very red. So he stands out.
I was expecting schlockiness. Especially after kind of like reading up on the history of the film and realizing that it went through kind of like development hell.
Yeah.
Lee Scott's original cut of it was slashed by about 25 minutes.
Oh, yeah, we should...
And the whole soundtrack replaced. And, like, when you hear stuff like that, you know there's probably something terrible on its way.
We should clarify, actually, that we watched, I think all of us, the theatrical cut, right, guys?
Yeah, if it had the synth soundtrack by Tangerine Dream, you watched the right one.
And it was about, what,
hour and a half?
90 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. I took it upon myself to also watch the director's cut.
Oh my god!
After I watched the theatrical cut as well, because I might skip ahead a little, but I needed to know if
this it was better.
If it was always such a car crash. But we'll mainly talk about the theatrical because that's the one we've seen. But I'll step in to maybe when some of the changes happen in the director's cut. Here and there. But to sum up, I was expecting something probably schlocky, but who knows, it might have been okay.
Yeah, when I saw the trailer, I kind of went, I saw it's kind of a bit like Labyrinth or something. You know, I kind of, it's not, you know, it's a little bit, it's like full of creatures that are like, you know, people have gone to town with making the creatures look unique and kind of ugly. And it's going to be a bit weird and dark, but I don't know. Once you know they're mutilating unicorns, you kind of get a bit, oh god, it's going to be troubling. So I was a bit concerned. And you guys, you know, you all decided we were doing it, and I had no idea. And then there was no voting for anything else for me. I didn't have great expectations. I didn't think it looked particularly interesting or good. I'd say I pegged it, but I had very little expectations. Tim Curry is usually good. That's the only thing I thought I had going for it. And young Tom Cruise is a bit, oh dear. And he's good in, like, his earliest film he's good in is, like, Rain Man. You could consider Top Gun a good one, but...
Was Rain Man before or after Born on the 4th of July?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not IMDb.
He's very good in that, too.
Tom Cruise, good and bad. Throughout his career, he's done some gems and he's done some terrible ones. You know?
I wanted to say as well, I think we've talked about it before, that I am still, even now, a Tom Cruise fan.
Despite all the evidence that he's terrible. Yeah.
Well, no, he's one of those actors who's like, when he is good, he's really, really good. Because he has a lot of charisma, but he's also comes across as a little bit unhinged, and there's a reason why Christian Bale said that he based his performance in American Psycho on Tom Cruise.
Well, like,
as I say, I'm kind of with you there, Jamie. I think he kind of developed his skills and kind of grew into it, certainly.
But I think
he knows his job and he can do it very well.
Well, his job in this was to mainly crouch crouch down.
Yes, there was a lot of squatting, wasn't there?
He has photogenic knees. I'll give him that.
Also, he's kind of appearing with lots of short people, so he must be really pleased to be the tall one of the group.
That's another piece of trivia that I thought was funny, is that Ridley Scott originally wanted to put Mickey Rooney in the film, but couldn't make him look small enough next to Tom Cruise. I don't know, the whole Tom Cruise being short thing is ridiculous, because, like, he is about my height.
Yeah, Jimmy, you're short. I hate to break it to you.
I am short, but...
He's not Danny DeVito small.
I know, exactly. I want to say, Tom, don't worry about it. It's fine. I've got along fine. You clearly have done very well. Don't worry about it.
I think Tom Cruise might have done a bit better than you, Jimmy. I don't know.
Marginally.
A lovely life, you know. But, financially, at least, he's doing all right. Abby, what were you expecting?
The words. Ugly 80s fantasy.
Tick, tick, tick.
Which is what I got. It's exactly my expectation, because it's of that era of, we can make really interesting looking ugly, not puppets, because usually people are inside. But you know what I mean? Just kind of like, put this weird head on. It's like, don't make him put the weird head on.
I'll fight you about the ugly thing. I thought this was a really good looking film. I thought that was like the only thing really that kept me watching was Tim Curry and just how much I liked the look of the film.
Okay,
the cinematography and the locations and all of that stuff was beautiful. But every time you had anyone wearing even a little bit of latex, disgusting.
Yeah. No, okay, then yes, I agree with you. The like made up little people actors who,
variations on scrotums, aren't they? Really?
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was very good ugly, but still ugly.
Unpleasant
at the end of the day.
Yeah, so, okay, so it cinematography is the thing that is praised about this film, and it is arguably very beautiful, but within the beauty is an abundance of... Can't every character be absolutely hideous? Like, Jim Henson has took the ugly stick to all of his puppets, and just... it's horrible. It's genuinely... If I was, like, I'm not saying I was the most masculine I can watch anything child, but I would have hated this as a child, because they're kind of ugly to the point of scary. Every, like, some of the villains, some of the, like dwarfs or whatever, or woodland creatures, they're all just sort of gnomes and stuff, aren't they? Like, they're, so many of them are creepy, and then Satan is extra ugly, and they just, they come across more ugly people.
I think it's because deep down, Ridley Scott can't actually do anyone nice.
No, I think it's his outlook. I think it comes from being a British director, to be honest.
Yeah. Mm. And he's from the north, isn't he?
Yeah. Everything's ugly and grim.
And all the attractive people are quite dim and uninteresting. And they all have stupid names. Right. Let me just say, off the bat, I hated this film so much. genuinely one of the worst films I've seen, because it bored me. It was arbitrary. Everything that happened was arbitrary. It was badly just put together. It doesn't matter how lovely, in quotation marks, it looks. Nothing made any sense. It was all just nonsense, arbitrarily slung together, and everything was unenjoyable. Everything just made me, and I was so bored. My mind was deleting it as I watched it. I can barely remember it.
I was actually going to say, I don't know if I hated it quite as much as you did, but I was definitely... I found it boring.
Yeah.
It's because it doesn't make a lot of sense. And none of the characters have any backstory or, like, Lily the princess is just a princess and she's there. And Tom Cruise is... What's his character's name?
Jack.
Jack is all nursery...
Ridley Scott seemed to have been going for was to make a really basic fairy tale, but the problem was he did it too basic.
Without any story or points to the characters.
Basic, yeah, it was basic to the point that no one really had any motivation other than I am in an archetype.
It's not even anywhere. They don't go, in the land of faraway dreamy town, or it's on the kingdom of boring. Like, it's nothing. Just the fairy tale land where unicorns exist. We did want to establish what exists. There's fauns and there's goblins and stuff. There's humans, and they get frozen at one point. And I don't know if they get unfrozen.
Yeah, that I was going to say, there's no resolution with that. Her name? Nell gets frozen, and then we never find out if she was okay. Presumably she was.
Everything just happens one after the other. I couldn't concentrate on it. It was like...
Yeah.
There was nothing to cling on to care about anyone.
And I really don't mind when a film is full of cliches, especially if the director has done that on purpose, as long as there is a clear purpose as to why they're doing it. But here, that's what Ridley Scott's done, and it sounds like that was his intent, but it doesn't really do anything. It is just a collection of cliches, and it's like him going, yeah, there they are. That's all the fairy tale stuff. Look at it.
Someone has no understanding of storytelling at all. They don't... fair enough, occasionally in children's films, there's not much motivational reason. Bad people are bad because they're bad. The weird Satan demon thing that Tim Curry's playing, his thing is, I'm the devil or whatever, and I like darkness and evil. I need to kill unicorns so that there's all eternal darkness. And the way to do that is to send my goblins to find someone innocent. And then they just stumble upon a princess who wants to pet a unicorn.
Mm.
And that's... I don't even understand their plan.
Whose innocence I bring up to question.
It's a dirty slut, yeah. Is that what you're saying?
It's the first thing you see her do is play a prank on someone. A really mean prank. And it's innocent.
Oh,
she bothered me all the way through. And, we'll get to her at some point.
What is for me as well, this film is arguably kid simple, but this is way too hardcore for kids. Murdered a unicorn.
It's another classic spoiler-filled, tone-deaf film where the plot is like a simplistic children's fairy tale, and then it has bloody skulls and people being cut up on tables in front of fireplaces.
Chairs that are trying to...
Yeah! I had a lot of hope coming from this first scene, because kind of the imagery going on and then Tim Curry turning up and being delicious as he is, I thought wow, and just the way everything looked, and I had a lot of hope coming in from this first scene, but it waned so quickly. Yeah. Oh, before that though was the worst, longest intro text I have ever seen of a film. Yeah. It was dire. They wouldn't think that. Just reading it was I'm bored already.
I don't think I did read it.
I don't think I read it either.
Yeah. I think if you're doing a film, and this goes for Star Wars, if you're starting with text, you haven't done your job. It's not a reading medium unless it's a foreign film. It's a film. You can show, not tell. And I'm not a big fan of leading us in with blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, I agree. It's context is fine. If you need to get over place, time, maybe a person, fine. But I'm not reading a small introduction before you begin.
You know, one of the things I don't with Star Wars. With Star Wars, I kind of understand it because it was a deliberate reference to Flash Gordon. But why not with a film like this, a spoken introduction instead? It's someone reading you a fairy tale.
Yeah. That would make perfect sense.
Well, the thing with Princess Bride is it does a nice thing of bookending the story and setting it up as a fictional story by having Columbo reading to that kid from that other sitcom. that's just nitpick, really, isn't it? That isn't really the major problem. The major problem is it's hard to care about what's going on because you don't know the rules of anything. Don't know how much magic exists. You don't know who's in charge of anything. You don't know, who is Jack? Does he have friends? What's his motivation other than he fancies a girl and wants to marry her? And he's dead keen because he'll, jump into a, massive lake instantly upon upon being said, if you get this ring back, I'll... Even that scene where Lily goes, oh, I quite like you and stuff. Whoever gets me this ring can marry me. And she throws her, why? Why did you throw it?
Yeah, that got me as well. A lot of stuff that happens is just arbitrary.
Yeah, that's the word of the film I would use, is arbitrary. Everything is arbitrary. There's no reason for anything. And it just happens to you, and it pours over your eyes. And I genuinely don't. I remember vague bits like, oh, there's some like they're trying to get shiny plates to reflect light at one point. They're trying to save a unicorn from being killed. That Satan is trying to, like, Satan dresses up Lily as a kind of cool goth chick and wants to sit in a particular chair so she gets eaten by the chair and have a chat over some sparkly jelly. Like, it's just
I'm glad you know. The jelly behind it.
It looked like a really weird buffet.
The jelly tear cake behind the Lord of Darkness.
There's just pockets that I remember, but mostly it's so incoherent, I can't put it together in a narrative. So I'm going to sit back, and every time I think it's necessary, I'll chirp up and tell you why it was shit. So please, the reins of the podcast is in you three guys' hands.
I kind of agree with you, because usually I'm the first one to disagree when you try and apply logic to a film that doesn't really have it.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's not that. Like, I do agree with you, and it's not because I care about logic. It's that what you said, the film, it doesn't. It's not that it breaks its own rules. It just never establishes any. Stuff just happens when it needs to. Like, people have magic when it's necessary.
And an abundance of the characters are annoying.
Yeah. Oh, that cardinal sin of a fantasy film. And I hate it when it happens. And Lord of the Rings is guilty of this as well. But those films are so... They were so well put together that I kind of forgive it. Although it does make me cringe. But this film, because it's such a mess anyway, having those... I don't know what they are, dwarves, goblins, whatever, use, like, really, really modern dialect.
Oh,
every now and again.
Dodgy Irish accents as well on some of them.
So out of place when, you know, you've got this little guy going, ah, check this out. And you're like, why are you talking like that?
Yeah, I quite liked, actually, design-wise, I quite liked the goblins. They were ugly as fuck. But there was one that had weird horns and a knight's, like, faceplate as part of his... I don't know if it's part of his head or what.
Well, was that not the one that they find in the cells later? That's what I couldn't understand. It was, wasn't it? I thought it was.
Yeah, it was.
One looks like a goblin, traditionally, and then one looks like a pig man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of creative, but to excess, where you don't even know what you're looking
Yiddish
at.
Yiddish pig.
Sorry, Anthony?
It was a Yiddish pig.
A Yiddish pig.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was. He was like, oh, he was like Jackie Mason.
Oh.
I mean, let's not worry about what that says about the perception of Jews. But the good characters as well were just ugly old men who were there for comedy, but I found every bit of it grating. So you guys, carry on. Please explain as much as you can, and I'll shush up a minute.
Well, that's the thing. There's not that much to explain. Clueless bird wants to have a look at a unicorn. Forest boy says, yeah, all right, come and have a look. She touches it. He gets really annoyed about it, despite having never told her not to touch the unicorn. Then there's a trap, and they're like, oh, yeah, we've harvested the horn because magic. And then it's just, oh, we need the other horse. We've got that. We're going to keep it for ages. The other one's the girl and boy separate with various ugly bastards go around the place collecting MacGuffins.
Collecting MacGuffins is a really good, like, oh, this will be significant at some point.
They have a big punch up with who I thought was one jailer, turned out to be two different jailers at the same time.
Yeah, massive, sweaty, big gimp guys.
She manages to set the unicorn free, except it stands there for a minute going, Boy stabs devil with unicorn horn and, you know, lights him to death.
Oh, don't forget the ridiculously long time they have of just placing plates everywhere.
That's in collecting MacGuffins.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And then what I found particularly distasteful is the fawn character, who's like a young boy with goat's legs and the voice of an adult for some reason.
He didn't have goat's legs, did he?
Oh, wasn't he not a fawn?
No, he was just like...
I think he was just wearing kind of like furry trousers.
Yeah, he didn't... He just had normal legs. He was just... I see why he looked like he would have been a fawn. Like, he had that character appearance about him, yeah. But...
That'd be racist of me. I just assumed hairy-legged boy in the woods without a top on. That's a fawn. No, Rich. There's apparently a distinction. He's a other thing.
I don't know what the hell he was. I don't think any of them did either.
There was like loads of characters that turned up. Like there was like a fairy who was not a fairy. She was a pixie just or something.
Wanted to shag Tom Cruise, I guess.
Yeah, and then
she was unsavory. Not for children.
Yeah.
Like so. Yeah, and then the thing I didn't like though is that kid with her furry legs. He was, as Tim Curry was like already stabbed with a unicorn's horn, and the light was kind of shoving him off a cliff. He was just yelling, "Kill him! Kill him!" It was like,
yeah.
Oh, all right.
My favorite bit actually was. When Jack is like, he sees, Lily, all like gothed up, and he's like, oh no, she's one of them. And, Gump, that's his name, the fairy boy, funnily enough, very close to Gimp, says, you know, judge her with your heart, not with your eyes. And then immediately goes, no, kill her, you're right.
She's
one of them.
Just forget about her, it's fine.
Yeah, give her the old Robin Hood right to the head,
right in the face.
Yeah, I liked. Dare I say I liked how she looked as a kind of goth. I don't know why. Like, there's a kind of bit where I don't know. She gets in the devil's lair. It must happen just as randomly as I remember it, and she has a weird dance with this kind of mannequin-looking dress.
Yeah.
Like, and then she switches and she's wearing it. It was a bit stupid to have someone dance and then be in a dress.
I kind of
turned her into something to suit the devil, I guess.
Yeah,
the devil only wanted to like have her as a girlfriend or fuck her or whatever because she's innocent. And it's kind of interesting that the devil's like, oh, she's so pure and innocent, she has to be mine. Anyway, but like I kind of liked her becoming a character that was like she was trying to outwit the devil. That's almost interesting. And then she is thinking, oh, she does the old trick of, I'm going to argue against you all the time until I think of an idea. My idea is, oh, all of a sudden I want to kill a unicorn. And the devil's like, I totally believe you. This is not a character.
Yeah, he's surprisingly gullible.
Yeah, he has a little cum in his pants. He goes, oh. What a good...
I think that reaction...
Tim Curry and his...
I think that reaction made the whole... effort of watching the film worth it just for his little squeal.
It was great. It was
that section, though, that was one of the worst edited bits, in my opinion, because their exchange had holes in it. She'd say something, he'd say something, she'd say something, and it wasn't relating to what he said, and vice versa. It's like, what have you done to this conversation?
Yeah, actually, that's like the. In the director's cut, it's cut really a lot differently.
Right.
So, but even then, it kind of doesn't make sense. So, it's
an odd bargain just to go from, I will not sit on your chair, I will not marry you, I will not be forced into any of this, and all that. And then it is just, I've got a bargain. I will marry you if I get one last request. The last request is, I want to kill the unicorn. Oh, God, that's evil. I love it. Oh, that turns me on.
It wasn't even that. It was just that little
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was a little squeak, wasn't it? It was like, oh, that was funny. But completely, it made no sense.
I will say I did, I found the scene where she's kind of dancing with the kind of spectre quite interesting, because I think that's one of the few moments where the film hits, like, this is odd and weird, but really watchable. It's just one of the few moments where it reaches that point.
It's one of the scenes where I can see what the film was supposed to be.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I think so. That's an okay moment. There's a few standalone moments where you go, okay, I get where you're going. But, okay, so an example of where it really just arbitrarily changes what the hell it's on about. We established Jack and Lily a little bit as people in the universe. And she basically says, get the ring and I'll marry you. She chucks it in the lake. He instantly dives off. She's like, what the fuck? I didn't expect you to get it instantly. What I meant was, I'm an idiot and I hadn't thought this through. But he's so desperate. He dives in and then he hits the water and it freezes over. And it's somehow tied to the unicorn being
mutilated. Yeah, I think that's what it is. Like, it's the unicorn got injured or whatever, and that, like, curses everything and freezes everything.
But it just happens all, like, instantly. It freezes over the lake. Yeah, everything's covered in snow. But they actually, the unicorn attack didn't happen exactly then.
Yeah, no, it happens in a really messy, nonsensical way that doesn't make it clear why it's happening.
I just didn't get what was going on. Like, is the ring cursed? Like, is the lake forbidden? I couldn't understand it.
Jack was underwater for a long time.
He was.
It was like, oh, he's going to drown. He's not going to drown? Oh, now you're going to pretend he's drowning.
Well, it's a fairy tale, isn't it?
He's that desperate to get married and stuff. He's not even going to sign a prenup. He just wants. Because in fairy tale land, of course, you can't fuck till you've got married. They're kind of oddly Christian that way. They're like, no poon till after the wedding.
Oh, you say that, but Lily was well up for it.
She was. I mean, she was.
Jack's the chaste one.
I don't know. I don't know what the fuck was going on. It just and then it just spray, like, there's so many just assumptions, and they throw characters at you without any sort of. In The Last Unicorn, which is a similar idea, you have people. They meet people on the road, and they have to introduce each other and explain who they are and set them up. Yeah. And this, it was just, so there's these people. They don't need names until halfway through the film, where someone says it, and you don't know if they've said a name or just made up some random words, gumbo and tingle dongle and like root canal.
Do you know what makes it? What makes at least the theatrical cut that much more confusing is the music by Tangerine Dream.
Yeah.
Because it does not fit like what's happening at all. And it just takes you out as this, there's this weird synth prog 80s music happening at the same time as a fairy tale rather than actually being part of it.
What scene is it over?
The whole film.
Oh, right. The whole.
The Tangerine Dream did the. The original score was by an orchestral score by Jerry Goldsmith, but the studio said, well, kids these days don't like...
Hold up.
Oh, shit, there they are now.
I think that's a dog, but okay.
Yeah, sorry, my dog's barking for some reason. Stop now.
The studio went, oh, kids these days don't like orchestral music in their fucking mental fantasy films. Where's that band that everybody loves? Tangerine Dream, that's them. And, like, had them do it, but the director's cut has the original score. So is it, like, I don't know, Anthony, you watched it. Is it any different?
It's a very classic sounding score, and it really kind of pulls the film together and makes it seem a lot more timeless. It's a weird thing to say, but you don't really notice it, but that's a good thing.
Mm.
Whereas you're always kind of aware of the weird music that's happening in the theatrical cut. It's a lot better in the director's cut, I must say. Such an improvement is ridiculous.
I can't say I even noticed. I watched the Tangerine Dream one, apparently. I couldn't have given two shits. Like, I didn't know. It wasn't on my radar as one of the problems, you know. So I don't have anything to say badly about it.
I think taken by itself, the score isn't actually bad. It reminded me a lot of Vangelis's Blade Runner score, but that doesn't make any sense for this film.
No,
and I'm not someone who doesn't think that people should experiment with genres and stuff. But it's so, again, tone deaf that it just takes you out completely.
Oh, and that dire song at the end.
I know.
I really did want to throw myself off the cliff with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
What was kind of a bit of a drag for the ending is obviously they're going to defeat the evil devil man, and it's done in a slightly ridiculous way, but they unicorn horn him in the chest. Actually, the unicorn horn was sort of falling into a puddle that was on fire, and I thought when it went in, I thought, oh, it's gone. And then he just reaches in and goes, no, it's just warm water, it's fine.
I thought it was at least going to have him like stick it in and be like, ah, it's hot, but I'm a hero. But no, he just dipped it in.
Just okay.
Yeah, I thought it was lava.
Yeah, it was on fire. I mean, what are you supposed to think? Like,
I don't like. They also they don't explain that. I mean, so if you cut a unicorn's horn off, I don't know where they get this mythology from, but that brings eternal darkness. If you kill the last unicorn,
I think it's just vague fairy tale stuff.
Yeah, but if you've got a unicorn horn, that's like a magic wand that can the goblins or whatever having a bit of a laugh because one of them has it and is like doing random magic in the frozen house of humans who. That's basically so Lily can overhear what's going on and be in jeopardy. And, like, so it's got powers, but then it's also discarded a lot of the time and just on the floor when it's not being used.
Yeah, because, again, it's another one of those, oh, remember this, it's important now.
Yeah.
Like, rather than actually being significant consistently throughout the film.
Well, it feels like adults couldn't have made this. Like, someone should have gone, oh, continuity-wise, does any of this make sense? Like, does anything have a point? Just everyone was just not focused.
The impression I get is that there was so much, like, shit going on during production that in the end it was just a case of, oh, that'll have to do.
Get it done.
Yeah, let's just get it finished. There are parts of it that, like, the opening scene that Anthony was talking about, where you're introduced to Tim Curry as the Lord of Darkness, and he's like sitting around being like, bleh, and you've got that guy being cut up on the table and there's fire everywhere. Yeah. Like that opening scene, I was in. I was like, oh, this looks like it's going to be some good stuff. And then it went to the forest and just shit itself all over its own, you know, Peter Pan tights. And then, like, pretty much most of the rest of the film just drags and is just this collage of nonsensical scenes that sort of tie together. And then there's the other scene, like the ending, where Tom Cruise has his confrontation with the Lord of Darkness, and there's all that build-up.
Yeah,
that I actually quite liked.
This is what I was going to say, is after they get the bad guy, you can come back if you have a different point, but they basically go, oh yeah, so to wrap things up, Tom Cruise has to go get that ring after all, because even though he saved the life of the woman, she's very pedantic about something she made up on the spot. Like, you have to get that ring, and then we're not unfreezing the kingdom. Oh look, a unicorn's back, even though we stabbed one. With the devil with the unicorn's horn, we somehow got the unicorn horn back, and we glued it back on with crazy glue, and done.
Yeah,
sunset, happy endings, boring. Like, it just drags on to finish, and makes no attempt to actually wrap things up. But you know, if you had a different point about the ending,
no, I was just going to say that there are moments that, like, that the fight between Jack and the Lord of Darkness, even though there was nothing really in it to get invested with.
Yeah, it was shit. It was still
just visually, it was cool to watch. In the same way that, like, do you know what? I've just come up with my definition. I'm going to save that for the end. But, no, like,
you found it a bit engaging because it was spectacular.
Kind of. It's more because, yeah, it looked cool, and there was more going on in that final confrontation than it felt like there had been for the rest of the film.
Yeah, I guess. There's so many, like, there's even, they rescue a character out of a pie at one point. And he just gets blasted by light and the doors. Like, I was like, they have a bit of drama because the doors to the boss fight area close and the light isn't going to reflect in. And apparently, like, just barges its way through concrete doors sometimes. So, yeah. I don't know, it was...
And the whole father thing, I don't know if that's explained in the director's cut. The Lord of Darkness keeps referring to his father.
Hmm.
Is that anything specific? Is that... I mean...
Anthony?
No, not really. It's not really touched upon. I think there's probably even less in the director's cut.
Well, actually, that's probably... would have been a good idea to cut out references to him saying father, because... Who's he talking about?
Is he Satan? Is he, like, he looks like?
Well, he's not actually Satan. He's never called.
No,
that.
But I mean, he looks like the kind of overly muscular. He's kind of like the Satan from, like, South Park. He's like this massively plastic muscular Satan, mega horns, and his face is just like someone has poured wax over a jack-o'-lantern and then gone to town on it. Like, it's just the weirdest. Gurning mask.
No,
face.
No, I'm not taking anything away from the Lord of Darkness and the entire, like, Tim Curry's performance and the makeup. that whole thing is basically just the movie. Like, it's
they all look like, they all look like evil Toby Jugs.
You're right. He does very much look like if Aleister Crowley had bought himself a Toby Jug.
He looks like if five penises and a vagina were trying to fight their way out of your face.
But he
so many of the characters are repulsive in excess. Like, they just come across like that with that water-based character. They have to cross some water because, you know, that's that scene in a fantasy movie.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, oh, off you go. Tom Cruise, who's supposed to be our hero, lets some randomer go ahead of him. And he falls in.
No. Gump was all like, oh, you go on then. Like, oh, is it Gump? Is it now?
Yeah.
Fine.
Oh, so he sort of calls his bluff or whatever.
Also, why is anyone listening to Gump? He's a little prick.
He is.
He doesn't really help anyone. He just kind of goes, oh, you have to do this stuff. And like, for some reason, he's voiced by the same person who voices Blix, the goblin.
Weird. I noticed that. It was kind of odd, wasn't it?
This bit has the moment that vexes me most of Pointless Jeopardy.
Yeah.
It's like, kill someone or don't. Just don't get him wet and move on.
How did he come up with the plan of, like, basically the plan to defeat the really tall, ugly, again, similar, like, to the Goblin and the Lord of Darkness, kind of ugly-faced, witch, tall, swamp creature, and she's going to eat them or something, and Tom Cruise's plan is, like, I'm going to basically give you compliments.
Yeah, be really polite and then kill her.
Like, you're hideously ugly, so I'm going to assume you have issues, and I'm going to say you're so beautiful. Look at this reflection of you. Aren't you gorgeous? Don't eat me. Someone as beautiful as you deserves someone less scraggly than I. And it's just, he basically gives her the shiny shield, and then instantly chops her head off. It's like, fuck you, bitch, you believe my stupid compliments? You ugly as fuck. Off you go. It was so... like, how did he even think to, like...
I don't know.
That was the approach to take. Like, I don't know. And they just... And there's just endless crap that went on for no point. Like, at one point, the sort of leprechaun-ish fat troll kit guy had a fight where he's, like, reflected all of the projectiles with the saucepan.
And then got shot in the teapot.
It was so confusing. That... He gets shot in his hat. He thinks he pretends to die. And we're like, wait, he got shot in his hat. Is he dead? Is his head that tall? And then he hasn't. It's been shot in like a portion or some shit. Or a teapot, was it, Abby? Whatever.
It's a teapot.
Yeah.
Like a jug.
It spills a lot of shit on his head. And then he's fine. And it's like, what the hell was that for?
That bit where he's like giving them lip and reflecting their shots with his pan was the first point where I really started to think, oh, I don't think this film is what I thought it was. Like, I may have made a mistake here.
It's just littered with pointless bullshit that's just... it's just like a quest, isn't it? Like, we have to get the suit of armour, because, you know, quest. And all the way through, Tom Cruise is crouching constantly. And letting a lot of his... Like, the one thing I'll say is his group of helpers, who help him for no reason at all, maybe they don't want to live in eternal darkness, I guess. They all do stuff... Like, they, you know, it's not Tom Cruise, I'll do everything heroic. He does do a bit of swinging from chains and killing the bad guy, but he actually does let them... Yeah, you go up the rope and get the shiny... Yeah. Get stuff open and...
There's a moment as well where the first chance he gets, he ditches both of those knobheads.
Yeah.
I'll go with Gump. You guys go the other way.
Yeah.
Say goodbye.
It's true. They don't have much cohesion, really, as a team. It's all arbitrary, that's the word. Anyway, carry on, guys. I mean, I don't know. It's such a mess of a story.
I think that's it, isn't it? Like, it is just a mess of a film.
It is.
Like, it is all over the place.
It's one of those things where it happened with The Bride a bit as well, where you can't make up for stuff by looking pretty.
Mm.
If you don't get the story right and the acting right, nothing you do after that will make a difference.
That's why it reminded me of Prometheus, in that it's a really pretty film, but kind of like, it's pretty stupid, really.
That was his problem. Because I haven't seen Prometheus.
Pretty much, yeah. I think Prometheus is more fun than this, because Like, the frustrating thing about Legend is that it's also really dull, which it should not be at all. Whereas Prometheus is stupid, but it's so colourful and over the top that you just, if you're in the right mindset, you just kind of roll with it and you're like, ah, fuck it.
You just find yourself asking questions like, so she's the princess, where are we? Where's she the princess of? Does the king and queen care? Are there royal servants that should be helping? Apparently not. Apparently some random boy who, does he have a job or what does he do? We don't know.
You didn't really establish, like, you're a princess, therefore you haven't married him yet. Why does your dad hate him?
Do you love each other? Like... And then it's like with the Lord of Darkness, it's like, fair enough, you vaguely want to live in a world where you don't have to not, you know, he can't get out in the sun, he's like a vampire or something. Yeah. Like, he wants eternal darkness and or to rule or something. And then he wants, so that involves killing unicorns for whatever reason, taking their horns. But then he's like, actually, I actually also have a boner for Lily the princess because she's innocent. I hadn't thought of that before, but now I've seen her, I guess I want to marry her. I just, this constant, like, why? Why is this going on? What's this about? Where are we? What is happening?
Yeah, that's pretty much the whole film, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Why? What? Okay.
Like, is there anything else good we want to mention? Or have we pretty much covered all our bases?
Anthony?
Tim Curry.
Yeah,
Tim Curry.
That is pretty much it. Like, Tim Curry, I mean, no...
There is... He's the only thing worth watching this film for. And even then, he's, like, in it for 10 minutes.
I'm not surprised, because that makeup looked like it was going to kill him.
Yeah.
But seriously though, other than that, other than, like, a few moments, like the dancing scene, I kind of liked the character of Meg as well. But, like, that's it.
It's just...
I couldn't look at it, though. It was boring and unpleasant to watch. I mean, it's so... Even Tim Curry, who's good, we can admit that, he still just looks like a Minotaur has had all of his fur burnt off, and then he's been hit with an iron a few times. Like, everything... I want to be sick looking at it, and as a child... Children are quite judgy about ugliness and prettiness, and you can get away with the odd hag or, like, a kind of creepy, like a goblin being ugly, but it was so unpleasant.
Off balance. Again, we were talking about this the other day, where it's like, you can't make everyone ugly, then that's the new normal. In order for these guys to be ugly, these guys have to be beautiful.
Yeah, it was like someone had melted some Skittles into some vomit, and I was meant to enjoy the rainbow effect. Horrible. It was a terrible film. And I watched some terrible films this week.
Do you know what? You should find some way to contact Ridley Scott and just tell him outright, what is this? Do you know what? I watched Legend this week, Ridley.
Yeah. For all the problems with Highlander 2, it's full of betrayal and it does things wrong, incredibly wrong, but I can follow it occasionally. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And Transformers 2 is offensively bad, and that's way down on my list. Like, Legend is so low down on my list, it's in the category of offensively bad sex dramas that think they're being edgy, but actually being incredibly horrible about people and are unrealistic. I've watched a few terrible, bitter films about people's sex lives. It's in that horrible place. It's not on the level of It's Betrayed Me, but I just hated it. It was boring and offensively awful.
I almost wish I hated it. My problem with it was I ended up feeling unsettlingly indifferent to it. Do you know that feeling you get when you wake up from a really, really weird dream?
Yes.
And then you try and tell Well, then you try and tell someone, and you realise how much of the dream you've already forgotten.
Yeah, and also dreams—that's
how
they don't
make it at the end of the film.
Yeah, like a dream doesn't have any continuity or sense. It just, I know this, I know that, I know it's about this, and you can't really—it doesn't make sense as a story.
But again, though, there are films like that that work. Like, there are plenty of films that are deliberately made with that dream logic in mind, where they're supposed to just feel like a nightmare, and not necessarily make linear sense.
Alice in Wonderland or something.
No, I mean, like, I don't know, Lost Highway or Mulholland Drive or something, but, like,
right.
That's you can't use that excuse for Flint, because it's supposed to be an old school fairy tale, and they, a lot of the time, are the most linear stories. And I don't know how something like this film, with a linear story, which it does have if you look at it on paper, can feel so just all over the place.
Like, if they were aiming for old school, they've managed to be completely truant. They haven't attended school at all. They get a zero for the year.
Yes, I agree. It's like films like Willow, right? They're a little bit dodgy. Like, they're that fantasy of the 80s where you kind of go, it's a bit old fashioned, and it hasn't got that, like, it has found its legs in terms of brilliance yet. But Willow, for all of its flaws and sort of uninspiring things, it's a followable, understandable within its own universe story.
It's coherent.
Yeah, it's
I think that's maybe why Willow has a bit of a better reputation than it perhaps deserves, is because if you look at what it was up against in the same era, you're like, yeah, Willow's the best one.
Yeah, which one are we going to go for? Willow, Legend,
Legend, Excalibur,
Krull.
Masters of the Universe. Goes Labyrinth, Willow, everything else.
I don't know. It's. I don't want to overstate how much I hate it, because hate is
already
the wrong
have.
Word. I don't know if it's hate. I dislike it. It's not for me, and I don't think it was good. It just wasn't a good film. It doesn't matter if it looks good. It didn't make any sense. And then personally, on top of that, it didn't appeal to me at all. So, you know, you guys think of your metaphors. Mine was Skittles in some sick.
I think it's the first Ridley Scott film to, like, disappoint me across the board. Because, like I said, I don't know, there's a few I haven't seen, though. I haven't seen that Exodus Gods and Kings thing, and that looks pretty shit. But, like, even Prometheus, as stupid as the story was, I enjoy it just because it's an insane film. Whereas this was just, it felt like I should have got the same experience out of it, but it was just flat, which is really weird for what the film is. I have my metaphor. When I at least was a teenager, I would have found an album by some metal band when I was, like, really into metal as a teenager. And I'd never heard of the band, but the album cover was awesome shit. Demons and horses and fire and whatever. I was like, and they had a cool name, whatever. So I'd buy it entirely based on that, like, amazing cover that would look like the theatrical poster for Legend.
Thunder Fist.
Yeah, and then you listen to it, and it's just a fucking mess. Like,
people
it's just
screaming in a teapot.
Yeah, like, yeah, the production's bad. It's like, scratchy and doesn't sound right. The musicianship isn't particularly good. There's a reason that you'd never heard of the band. And it's, like, derivative, but with no direction. Like, they'd sound like a shitload of other metal bands, but nowhere near as good.
Mm. Cradle of Filth comes to mind.
Yeah,
actually, Cradle of Filth have more. They've captured something in their Cradle of Filth. They're not.
Yeah, they have integrity.
All the bad guys looked like the band Lordy, actually.
Or Gwar.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying, though, but it's like a...
It's like, yeah, I'd see that and I'd go, oh, do you know what? Iron Maiden also have cool album art, and they're quite fun. I'd rather listen to that.
Yeah. Can anyone top Skittles and Sick or a misleading album art?
I have a similar sort of thing to Jimmy, but mine is 80s knockoff toys. When, say, like, they're trying to knock off Transformers, but they sort of pick stuff at random from Transform Into... Like, oh, this one transforms into an ice cream. What?
Yeah.
It's like, well, one of those where it's like, you took all of the rules, you took all of the motifs, and you made something that doesn't make any effing sense.
Do you mean, like, actual knockoffs, or do you mean ones that were officially licensed, but really weird versions that hadn't been in, when you'd get, like, Ninja Turtles, but in submarine gear or something? Yeah. They're like, what is this?
I had one
that works too. That group in general.
I didn't know if you meant, like, an action figure that you'd get in the post office, who's, like, their head pops off or something. But
probably more like that, yeah.
Yeah, they look a bit like a Power Ranger.
Because I had a turtle action figure that was dressed as a samurai, and he pulled his legs together, and he, like, more samurai claws hopped out and covered his face. And it was cool, but it didn't make sense. And the ice cream robot sounds good. I think it's like something like a robot that transforms into a trouser press or something. It's like...
that Turtles samurai one, that's the third movie. I mean, like, the Turtles who... there was a line of them that where they'd be dressed in baseball gear.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, what's this cashing in on?
Happens a lot with Batman and Spider-Man as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we were in the shop the other day and we saw Hot Wheels Star Trek.
Oh my god, yeah.
They're the worst.
It's just all 70s vans and...
Yeah, 60s and 70s cars and vans with just a picture of a person on the side of it. So like Scotty's on the side of a van. Yeah. Kurt's on the side
of a station van. There's a like Darth Vader Hot Wheels car. All right.
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
But Anthony, do you have a metaphor?
I haven't got one yet. Let me work through this because I think I've got like a slightly different perspective of the film you guys. Yeah. Because I did end up watching the director's cut after it, and it doesn't make it a good film, but the flow is definitely there in the director's cut. Like it. There's a lot more cohesion. For example, some of the bits that were different was when Tom Cruise's character first meets like Gump and all those. This is essentially how it plays out. Like, hello, do you know me? No, I'm the Gump. Have you noticed anything strange? Yes, I touched a unicorn. What? Everything's gonna die. Oh, but I did it for love. Oh, that's okay then. Let's go and do something.
Yeah,
that's essentially how it plays out in the theatrical cut. But there's a whole scene there where he kind of has a go at him and gives him a riddle and a challenge.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing a riddle. What was the riddle? It was something really crap.
I don't even remember.
What bell doesn't ring, but its chime pleases the universe or something?
Oh, fuck off.
Flowers, they're like bells, and they are. Oh, you knew it. For some reason. Why
did he give him a riddle? He had a massive freak out, didn't he?
He should be pissed about it.
Okay, this is weird now because the theatrical cut that I saw didn't have that scene.
Really?
I don't know if there's another cut that you guys saw.
I think it might be because there was other stuff earlier on where the editing was really weird. And I was sort of like, no, you haven't even edited this for the theatre. You just cut off that guy mid-sentence. So it might have been a TV cut we watched.
Do you know what? To be honest, the film... as it is so nonsensical and boring that we could have watched several different cuts and I don't think it would have made that big a difference.
It doesn't matter how you cut it, it is terrible.
Yeah, like I said, it doesn't make it a good film, but there's definitely a pace and a flow that's there in the director's cut, which isn't there. So it's kind of like, I don't really know how to put it, like when someone does a fan video of a film on YouTube and then... just cuts up all the weird bits and then puts like their own song over the top.
Yeah.
And you watch it and it's like, I can't really deem anything from that.
Yeah.
But it looked odd.
But the whole film you're saying is like that cut of a YouTube video.
It's like a super cut.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what is the... maybe there's a good... No, there's definitely... doesn't matter how much you put back into it. I can't imagine it gets better. So... Are we happy with our evaluation?
Yeah, I think so.
It's terrible. Yes.
It's like watching children paint with shit.
Sounds like one I would have come up with. Legend. Taste the rainbow, vomit the rainbow.
Although, I have to give it credit. It felt like everyone was trying really hard to make a good film, but it just...
I don't know.
Off the cliff.
A lot of the actors... a lot of the actors who were actually in more than one scene, as it went along, you got this sense of, you don't actually know what's happening right now. You're just hoping you say this in the right way.
Yeah, Tom Cruise always looked like, okay, I'm innocent and I'm saying the lines. That's all I have to do. Say the lines, be a nice, innocent guy. Crouch down a lot.
Yeah, okay, well, that's just the actors, but I can't really praise them. But I mean, like, everyone like the set creators, the costume makers, the hair and makeup people.
Everyone who didn't read the script.
Well, you see,
great job.
I felt like they were giving their best, but like it was doomed to fail.
Well, they all made the ugliest thing ever, and they made the ugliest thing ever look sort of beautiful. The people who did the work on the masks and latex and all that, all the stuff they did to create the creatures to make them look the way they did. There's a lot of effort, but they have a horrible taste and vision, and they should stop doing art. They are broken people who are making the world uglier. No, that's just my opinion. Any hate mail directed at Rich at Spoilerfield. The other guys weren't so harsh, so I'll let you guys off the hook. You didn't say it, I said it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean...
So in future, any hate mail regarding any podcast that we do, direct it at Rich.
Yeah.
Even if it's something Jamie has said that's offensive, apparently. Well, anyway, let's not let this. I didn't want you guys to be responsible for me slagging off creative people who, like, Anthony was saying they made effort. I was saying their effort was not appreciated. That's all.
The F they did. But no, that is entirely Rich's opinion. I can see that there are people, there were people in this production who tried very hard. They were the wrong people.
I just think the whole film is like, the intent was there at the start, but for whatever reason, everybody just burnt out and got sick. It took like 5 years to make or something. No wonder it's a mess.
Yeah. It was absurd.
Yeah, so, you know, next time, check out the film about the Craze legend. It's much better by comparison, certainly. That's what I would say. Just watch the other legend. Or The Legend of Bag of Vance, where Will Smith plays a magical vagrant golf instructor.
You hate Will Smith.
I love The Legend of Bag of Vance. We're going to have to do that soon. It's so good, but so, so terrible.
If you're recommending a Will Smith film...
This must have been bad.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that legend has broken you if you're Will Smith films.
In the contrary, I don't enjoy Will Smith very often, but when he's a magical golf instructor.
Everyone gets one.
I don't know. Like, let's just end the podcast.
Much like legend. We're just now meandering around.
Yeah, meandering around, wasting time when we should be saving the frozen people or whatever. Anyway, time to say goodbye. Goodbye.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
It's just. Let's go kill some unicorns. It'll turn Tim Curry on so much.
Bye.
Bye.